It was late at night when Kia reached the colony. The gates of the castle were closed and would not open again until reveille and the hoisting of the VOC flag at daybreak. But Kia knew that these days Gwenyama, his master, seldom slept in his sumptuous quarters within the high stone walls. There was a fresh and irresistible attraction for him in the town. It was the decree of the VOC Council in Amsterdam that the burghers of the colony, and more especially the servants of the company, should not have congress with the natives of the country. Like many of the other decrees of the 17, they were written only on paper, and Colonel Kayser kept a discreet little cottage on the far side of the company gardens. It was situated down an unpaved lane and was screened by a tall, flowering lantana hedge. Kia knew better than to waste time arguing with the sentries at the gates of the castle. He went directly to the colonel's love nest and slipped through the opening in the lantana hedge. A lamp was burning in the kitchen at the rear of the cottage, and he tapped on the window. A shadow passed between the lamp and the pane, and a female voice he recognized called, "Who is it?" Her tone was sharp and nervous.
"Shala, it is Kia,"
he called back in the Hottentot tongue, and heard her lift the locking bar on the door. She swung it open and peered out. She was only a little taller than Kia and looked childlike, but she was not.
"Is Gwenyama here?" Kia asked.
She shook her head. He looked at her with pleasure. The Hottentot were cousins of the San, and Shala was Kia's ideal of a beautiful woman. Her skin glowed like amber in the lamplight, her dark eyes slanted up at the corners, her cheekbones were high and wide, and her chin was narrow so that her face was the shape of an inverted arrowhead. The dome of her head was perfectly rounded and covered with a pelt of peppercorn curls.
"No, he has gone away," she repeated,
and held open the door in invitation. Kia hesitated. From their previous encounters, he had a clear picture of her sex in his mind. It resembled one of the succulent desert cactus flowers, with fleshy petals of a pouting purple texture. Added to that, there was an intense pleasure to be had from stirring the master's porridge pot. Shala had once described the colonel's manly part to Kia.
"It is like the beak of a sugar bird, thin and curved. It sips my nectar only lightly, then flits away."
The men of the San were famous for their priapism and for penile dimensions unrelated to their diminutive stature. Shala, who had much first-hand experience in these matters, considered Kia to be gifted beyond all his tribe.
"Where is he?" Kia was torn between duty and temptation. "He rode away yesterday with 10 of his men."
She took Kia's hand and drew him into the kitchen, closed the door behind him, and replaced the locking bar.
"Where did they go?"
he asked, as she stood before him and unwrapped her robe. Kayser, delighted in dressing her in the gaudy silks of the Indies, and in pearls and other finery that he purchased at great expense from the go-down of the Courtney brothers.
"He said they were following the wagons of Bomvu, the red-haired one," she said,
and let the robe slide down her body to the floor. He drew in his breath sharply. No matter how often he saw those breasts, it was always with a shock of delight.
"Why is he following those wagons?"
He reached out, took one of her breasts and squeezed it. She smiled dreamily and swayed closer to him.
"He said they would lead him to the runaways, to Samoya, the son of the Courtneys, and the woman he stole from the shipwreck," she answered, her voice husky.
She lifted the front of his kilt and reached under it. Her eyes slanted lasciviously, and she showed small white teeth as she smiled.
"I do not have much time," he warned her. "Then let us be quick," she said, and sank to her knees in front of him. "Which way did he go?" "I watched them from the top of Signal Hill," she replied. "They went along the coastal road towards the west."
She placed her elbows on the floor to brace herself, and leaned forward until her extraordinary golden buttocks were raised towards the thatched ceiling. He went behind her, moved her knees apart, knelt between them, and, both hands on her hips, pulled her back towards him. She gave a soft little squeal as he forced apart her fleshy petals and went in deeply. At the end she squealed again, but this time as though in mortal agony, and then she flopped forward onto her face and lay there in the centre of the kitchen floor, writhing weakly. Thea stood up and adjusted his leather skirt. He picked up his quiver and bow and slung them over his shoulder.
"When will you come back?" she sat up shakily. "When I can," he promised, and went out into the night.